One-on-One. I'm Charles Wolforth here at Kaladi Brothers in Midtown Anchorage, and we're going to be talking about music today. My guest, Philip Blanchette, is one of the founders and musicians in Bumula, a band which has unified Yupik music and culture and sort of Sly and the Family Stone, funk, rock, what we call music of the dominant culture, and they've come up with their own incredible mix that really works. They've put out 5 albums. They're putting out new music right now. They've performed at the National Museum of the American Indian in New York, in Washington. They performed with the Queen of Denmark. These guys have been around all over the world. Thanks so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So you were talking about sort of the moment when you realized that there was something special that could be mixed from these two cultures, musically, and something new could happen. You weren't just taking a little bit of a sort of a motif and sticking it in there, you were actually blending. How did that come about?
Well, we definitely weren't trying to do it. And it kind of, we stumbled upon essentially a sound, and which created a feeling, and it was undeniable between my brother and I as we were essentially just sitting down in his living room and singing, and I was actually teaching him a melody that comes from up north, comes from Barrow area. So it was a song that was kind of commonly taught throughout like all the schools here in Anchorage. Like probably, you know, a lot of people in Anchorage, I grew up in the school district, had been taught this song by Ben Snowballer. That's actually who I learned it from. And so it was this igloo building dance, and it's a common song up in Barrow. And we were, I was teaching him the song, and he kind of, initially kind of annoyed me because he wasn't doing it the way I was teaching him. And, what I realized is that he was harmonizing. And you know, in that moment, both of us instantly kind of heard that harmony and felt it, and we couldn't control ourselves, and we just started laughing, and we were just like giggling like we were like schoolgirls or something. And we would like look at each other and our eyes would water up, and we would like without explaining anything, we'd try it again. And every time we'd get that moment or that hit that harmony, and our voices would kind of blend together, mm-hmm. like they were, I guess, one, or creating something like a new sound, we would stop, and or we would involuntarily stop and giggle. And we basically did it until we can get through that entire song. And then after that, we were like, it was like, well, do you know any other ones? And I was like, let's try this one. So I started teaching him.
So you're westernizing in a way, what's the blending that's taking place there? What's the magic?
I don't know. You know, at the time, it wasn't, I guess it was kind of making it more, singing it more R&B, quote unquote soul, like soul music. Mm-hmm. And so that's the type of music that we listened to a lot. Yeah. You know, between my brother and I, we loved a lot of vocal R&B groups. And so that was one of the things that we identified with. The other thing, which actually led from that moment of singing these dance songs. And then once we got through all the songs that I knew, you know, and we tried to work them out, and had a couple numbers that we created at that time, arrangements, then we started singing gospel songs because our father and stepmother are ministers. And so we grew up going to church. And so there was a certain number of hymns that we knew and that we really liked. And, you know, and that's where you don't really remember all the lyrics, or you just kind of know some of the melodies or the chorus. So we were singing kind of these songs trying to sing them real soulful and gospel style. So I think that it was kind of a mixture of singing these ancient Alaska Native melodies in a sense with these soulful sounds of R&B and gospel influence, just with the two of us.
A different kind of rhythm, different kind of vocal style.
Yeah, different rhythm. Yeah, different rhythm and different texture of the vocals.
Yeah.
Like a little, instead of more on the beat melody, it's more like, yeah, yeah, oh. You know, we just created just a little bit of a different flavor. And It was fun.
And at some point you realize, okay, we're going to really go with this. We're going to run with it.
Well, you know, that night, and after we created our little tiny repertoire of things that we can do, we drove about, you know, half an hour to our dad's house, and we had a lot of family singing traditions with our dad growing up when he would tuck us in at night.
In Anchorage?
This is in Wasilla.
This is in Wasilla.
We would always sing songs, and so he would sing doo-wop. We'd sing church songs, gospel songs, and then it would end, and he would sing a doo-wop song, "Good Night, Sweetheart." You know, "Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go." And so we would sing that just forever. You know, when we were kids, and then my dad and his wife had four other kids, and so when they were growing up, we continued that tradition with them, and so we would, and you know, have all these memories in front of the bunk beds, you know, all of us singing, and so it was just kind of a fun family tradition, and
what's the ethnicity of your two parents? I mean,
my mother is Yupik Eskimo, and so she's from the Bethel area. She was born in Nunapichuk, and so that's where my grandparents were from in their adult years. And my father's African American, so he was born and raised in Philadelphia and Philly.
Yeah.
And so he, our ethnicity on our father's side is a little bit a mystery in a sense, because we know that we have American Indian and of course Caucasian, European, and African American.
But I mean, the Philadelphia music scene. Is that coming out there in terms of?
I guess, yeah. He never really shared a lot of that with us, which it wasn't until he just moved to Hawaii recently. Mm-hmm. Him and my stepmother Martha, and they finally cleaned their garage and all this, and finally had all these records and all these great funk soul records that I guess my dad was into when he was younger. And
it got into your blood at some point.
Well, apparently, because I, you know, this is stuff that I end up kind of finding on my own. Uh-huh. And then, like, it was so great. It's like, oh, my dad likes this too. And so it was a great moment. But I was like, why didn't you share this with us, you know, like, years ago?
Well, I want to play some music for the folks so that those who aren't familiar with what you're doing can hear it. And I guess you've got a new video coming out?
Yeah, we got a new album, and we're at the late stages.
What's the title of the album?
And the album is called Side A, Side B, and it's a double disc album. And it's traditional. It's all music in our language, whether it's in Yupik. There's one song that's Unangah from the Atka Island, but this particular song is called Ocean Prayer. And it is a song that Aussie in our group, he composed, and he actually composed it as a dance, and we've made several arrangements to it. And so this music video is an arrangement that's just with vocals and the Yupik drum, the Jawiak. And so it's really pretty, and we shot this in right on the Cook Inlet in January, and it was about minus 10 Fahrenheit. It was really, really cold, and so we had this. We work with a great local film group, and kind of a collective of artists that luckily we met, and we're like, well, you know, do you want to do something? And they were like, let's do it next week.
All right, let's check it out. This is Bamiwa. And that was Bamiwa from their new album, Side A, Side B, which is coming out late 2012?
Mm-hmm.
The early 2013, whenever it's done?
No, it's definitely coming out this year, 2012. We haven't found a date. We're still, what we want to do is do a big show here in Anchorage and do a concert. And that's also when we'll premiere this music video, the full length version, as well as the other ones that we've created. We shot another music video in Unalakleet. And that was a great great time, big party, and we're still editing, working on that one. And we have a couple plans for other music videos that we want to shoot this summer, but it's all kind of time permitted, and see if it's hard to, you know, get people to commit to something in the summertime in Alaska.
Yeah, really. So you are doing something that basically nobody has ever done before in terms of you're making a professional career out of melding these two kinds of music, and you're taking it all over the world. And it seems like there must be some real challenges there in finding venues and finding the radio stations that'll play your music and getting it out there. How have you, has that been a learning process, or how have you gone about doing that?
We have been kind of doing this very organically from the beginning. It kind of like how we discovered the sound, the way we have presented it has been just very natural in the sense we just go with the flow and see where it takes us. And so as far as the industry and promoting it and marketing it, we've never really done that and never really worried about it. We just would perform somewhere and have a great time, and all of our work has been kind of word of mouth. And so we feel very fortunate in that sense to be so specialized and so kind of in between all these different styles of performance that people are used to, and to just present it. And for us, we've been doing it for all these years, but for people to hear it for the first time or to see it for the first time, it's always fresh, and that's always really exciting. So we're just really, we're very, very fortunate to be able to find something that speaks to ourselves as individuals, and that has something directly to do with our own personal identity. Because each one of us in the group, the four of us, Steve, Aussie, Kareen, and I, each one of us brings our own feeling to the group and our own ideas, and we don't agree on many things, but the things that when we do come together, it's really, that's what kind of keeps it exciting for us and keeps it fresh, and we respect each other's qualities that way. I don't know where my train of thought was, but we're still going.
But I mean, if you were going to come up with a marketing plan of like what could get us some media coverage, like you would have come up with a pretty good one, because here, Eskimo is doing funk. Oh, that's new. Haven't heard that before, right? Or no?
I'm not sure. We've kind of tried to figure out in some ways how to market it best, and we also don't want to do something that's out of context of the culture.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is that are some of those band discussions you're talking about have anything to do with how true to tradition you need to be, or respect for tradition and that kind of thing?
For sure, yeah, definitely. We consider that as a pretty high priority, and it's not something that we, stress out about and like we feel like we have to do these things this way. We just work towards just trying to respect ourselves and each performance and the intention and the songs and the families and to try to make it natural. I guess that's our way, is just kind of...
It's got to be real.
Do things, be real, and not push things too far and too hard. And so that's kind of hard to do when you're really pushing yourself towards one direction.
Yeah.
And then we're trying to figure out how to do that. And with this new album, we are going to be presenting it in a way that we feel is going to be able to do that in some respects, and so that's not going to be out of context. So we're promoting it as world music, which is a lot of what we do is falls within the world music genre. It's very vague and very general, but what we're focusing on is Inuit world music, and that's one of the things that we do have in common with, for example, Karina in Greenland. And,
mm-hmm. She's your female lead singer.
Yes, and And then we've traveled to all over Inuit country in Canada and in Alaska and in Russia. And that's the culture. That's a, you know, the essentially the what we represent and our music. That's kind of what we want to represent as well. Is we want people to, when they think of Inuit world music, we want to have a voice in that. And so we're working on promoting that, because that's not really a established genre as it is. If you look up world music and try to find music from the northern part of the world, the polar, circumpolar regions, it's pretty difficult to find.
So now you're creating your own genre. You only take the easy task, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
It's one-on-one. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Philip Blanchett of Bamula. And we're talking about music and talking about the collision or the interaction of cultures. And, you know, it seems to me that I've talked to a lot of Native young people who are, you know, it used to be that people were pushed into the dominant culture, you know, and didn't honor their Native culture. But your generation, no. Really, that your Native culture is honored in schools and in families. But you've also got to deal with this dominant culture, which is there. And different people have found different ways of mixing the two and bringing them together and figuring out, you know, the phrase, walk in two worlds. Mm-hmm. And your music almost seems like it's a total manifestation of that. Is that true, or is it, am I reading too much or reading the wrong interpretation into that?
No, I think that's a good interpretation, that the songs honor both the roots of where the song comes from and the personal creativity and other cultural influences that are there within the music for people to interpret for themselves, mm-hmm. as well as our own. So when we interpret a song, you know, we definitely have an intention, and mm-hmm. and so it's just honoring
your culture bearers, but not of a museum piece. Your culture bearers of a living culture, which is evolving and changing and taking in new strands.
Exactly, yeah, and that's a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's alive, and we're, from our perspective, we don't see things as a museum piece. And mm-hmm. and when I see museums and see other cultures, and that have that stigma, I don't identify with as much. I understand that that's definitely not that's not the only way to look at things. But for luckily, we have grown up in a part of our community and a culture that the indigenous culture is very strong and very evident, and it's very inspiring, and it's there. That's the thing, is it's there, and so there's no way that we would do anything else but what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You have a measure of success, which is very immediate, which is you're up on stage, you're playing music in a club or whatever the setting is, and you're seeing the people in front of the stage, and they're reacting to you, and they're really getting turned on by this music and feeling a part of it. And I mean, that energy feedback must be a real good indicator for you if you're doing it right. Do that.
For sure. And that's, you know, from our perspective, that's the Yupik way. And that's not just only the Yupik way, but that's, you know, that's a very a very useful and direct, like it's a way that works. And within the Yupik tradition, specifically the dancing, mm-hmm. everything is always projected, mm-hmm. and there's always that interaction. And so when you're doing the moves, so much of what you're doing is to honor not only the intention of the performance and the song and the dance itself, but it's to honor the people that are there, whether it's your grandma and you're dancing for them. And it brings them joy.
And you're looking at them, pulling them in. Because I see the charisma when you guys are on stage. It's not at all like the rock band that's sitting back there, yeah. and doing this, you know? You're like reaching out there and pulling them in your,
yeah.
arms.
Yeah, it's a great feeling, like you said. I mean, it's immediate. We definitely feel it when we're there. And it's so nice because when we do it, and you really connect with people, and it's something that
people really appreciate. And afterwards, you know, you talk and you feel like you can be so much more closer. And it's kind of a gift that we've been able to learn, or we've been able to witness that and kind of emulate that model early on, to say, well, you know, we may be performing on a stage in, you know, across the world with people that have never seen Yupik dancing, but when we sit down and dance and do that, begin the performance, that all we're doing is just doing the same thing as we would do in Bethel at the Jemai Festival, or which is basically dance for the people, bring them in, invite them into that song, and have them experience it. And then a lot of times when we're performing, we'll see people we know or have danced before, you know, in Wisconsin or like, yeah, you know, somewhere, anywhere in Little 48, and then they will invite them to come up on stage and dance with us. Uh-huh. And it's that, yeah, creating that inclusionary kind of...
Are there certain venues or performances that have really stand out in your mind as being ones that were like, oh, that's what I'm doing this for?
Well, when we performed for the Queen of Denmark in Greenland, that was really...
Did you loosen up and get into it?
We were all very nervous. Not, yeah, I guess nervous, but we were, everything was very, very tight, like the timeline, and everybody was very strict. Uh-huh. And we had a great time, but I was nervous because I usually introduce and talk a lot at the performances at the beginning, but I usually go with the flow and off the cuff. And I knew I couldn't do this. So for this, I remember being in the hallway and I was memorizing how to introduce Bumyua on behalf of Alaska and, you know, the Yupik people. And I was pretty nervous. So that was pretty memorable. But I think by far our most memorable experience collectively with the members has been in Chukotka. We performed in Anadir, which is right over the border. And it's pretty much as far as you can go to from our cultural awareness, you know, and our and just politically, you know,
Far Eastern Russia on the far side.
It's
of
right next, yeah, door. Like we're right here, they're right there, and there's so close but so far, and we have so many things in common. Yeah. Not only with the indigenous
Yupik people too.
There's Yupik people, Siberian Yupik people, and the Chukchi. Mm-hmm. And we connect with them on you know, culturally with as indigenous people and indigenous cultures. But then for the greater Russian culture, European culture, there's so much to appreciate and learn from. But then to realize that culture, like Yupik, so much of Yupik words, central Yupik words, are Russian. And to, you know, like to go to Moscow and like to speak Yupik, in a sense, to somebody in Moscow, like so far removed, but to realize how rich and amazing their culture is
so deep, yeah,
and to feel that connection, it's like really empowering. But in Anadir, when we were there, since we were able to experience that, and all of, and we knowing that people back home are not, probably never going to experience that. It just kind of made a very profound, it was a very profound moment.
You're an ambassador, essentially.
Yeah, and I really wish that, you know, everybody in America could go travel to Europe and go travel to different parts of the world and really learn. And that's been the biggest reward for us, is, yeah, to be able to travel all over and to meet people all over the world.
And you've also, I mean, you haven't stood still musically. With each album, you've been evolving, doing things new, doing things different. And we don't have too much time left, but in terms of where you're going with your next album and how that evolution takes place, I'm curious how that comes about.
Yeah, we have a lot of music that we've recorded and we perform live that we've never released on an album. And It's kind of for that reason, because it's hard to group things together and make sense or have enough of it. Like I've written a handful of reggae songs, so you know I just need to sit down and make an album. So I need more songs. So we have a lot of different
experimentation
styles that we've worked with and just it's just an expression, and somebody comes up with a song, and
it just happens, huh?
We perform it, and we love to do that. So so there's a lot of directions that we plan on going and releasing some, and who knows, it's always growing.
Pami is 15 years old, you're still an adolescent.
Exactly, yeah, we're still learning.
Well, thanks so much, this has been great. I really wish you all the luck, and your music is, I mean, it's a great ambassador for Alaska, and I think everybody's really proud of what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been Philip Blanchett, it's been my guest today on One-on-One here at the Coffee House in Midtown Anchorage. Please join us again next week.
One-on-One is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. John LaFournaise directs and edits the show. Pat Yak is the producer. Camera operators are Travis Gilmore and Josh Edge. One-on-One was filmed at Kaladi Brothers Cafe at JL Tower in Anchorage. You can watch One-on-One Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Alaska Public Television, or listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. on KSKA. Tune in next week for One-on-One when Charles Woolforth interviews Alaska Dispatch publisher Alice Rogoff. This is KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.